You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Our passage today is at the end of what is commonly called the Beatitudes, Jesus' how-to manual on being a whole human being. There are two metaphors in this passage, salt and light. And Jesus doesn't pick his metaphors out of thin air. They generally reflect the historical Jesus' real-life surroundings. And the passage I want to focus on today is a perfect example. From Jesus' bachelor pad in Capernaum, or anywhere on the lake for that matter, you could see the city of Hippus, a city of the Greco-Roman Decapolis, perched on a hill over the Sea of Galilee. Today, Kibbutz En Gev sits right below the archaeological site of that same Hippus, the city set on a hill. I can imagine Jesus pointing to the city for emphasis when he used this metaphor. Hippus was like a lighthouse. You couldn't not see it from anywhere around the Sea of Galilee. It's a natural object lesson for Jesus to have used every time he repeated his stump speech of the Beatitudes. And the metaphor is so clear, it's one that resonates with us 2,000 years later, even though most of us don't know the geography that Jesus would have used to make his point.
Our words of wisdom are from Matthew chapter 5, verses 13 through 16. You are the salt of the earth, but if salt has lost its taste, how can its saltiness be restored? It is no longer good for anything, but this is thrown out and trampled underfoot.
You are the light of the world. A city built on a hill cannot be hid. No one, after lighting a lamp, puts it under the bushel basket, but on the lampstand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
Bishop Tutu used to tell the story, there once was a light bulb which shone and shone like no light bulb had shone before. It captured the limelight and began to strut about arrogantly, quite unmindful of how it was that it could shine so brilliantly, thinking that it was all due to its own merit and skill. Then one day, someone disconnected the famous light bulb from the light socket and placed it on a table. And try as hard as it could, the light bulb could bring forth no light, no brilliance. It sat there, looking so disconsolate and dark and cold and useless. Somehow it had never dawned on the bulb that its ability to provide light came not from itself, but from the power station and all the wires and connections that lay hidden and unseen and totally unsung. For weeks now, we've been considering the idea of Ubuntu, that African concept that in one word acknowledges the essence of being itself and is probably best translated by the phrase, I am because we are. It acknowledges that we are irrevocably and undeniably interconnected, not just with other human beings, but with all of creation. And even those elements of creation, those people that shine the brightest, are pretty dim if they think or act like they've done it all by themselves and have no obligation or connection to anyone or anything else. Musicians know this phenomenon well. My most memorable musical experience, I'd even say they were religious experiences, had been when a group of people can come together and sound as one, become one while playing. It's almost impossible to express if you haven't experienced yourself, but once I experienced it, to achieve it again became the objective of every musical endeavor. Bishop Tutu says it well. Music would be good even if it were just the contribution of one person. But it is glorious when it is a harmony of different voices. God says it is precisely our diversity that makes for our unity. It is precisely because you are you and I am me that God says you hold on together. I am because we are. We are so much more together than by ourselves. When Jesus was asked, "What's the greatest commandment?" He said, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. And in the same breath, love your neighbor as yourself." Jesus got Ubuntu. He preached it. He lived it. He modeled a life that identified with others and was at its richest when it was in relationship with others. Being a neighbor isn't simply being nice to someone you meet on the street. It's recognizing our interdependence, our mutuality. Every person depends on other persons to be a whole person. My humanity is bound up with your humanity. So I've checked with Jesus, and I'm here to tell you that he gives his wholehearted approval for me going into the Gospel of Matthew and adding a few new beatitudes. Blessed are persons who are persons through other persons. Blessed are those whose humanity is bound up with the humanity of others. And blessed are those who know that I am because we are. Jesus also told me I can call them the Ubuntitudes. December marked the passing of Bishop Desmond the Arch Tutu at the age of 90. Back on his 80th birthday, a huge celebration was planned. Dignitaries and celebrities from all over the world came to celebrate this diminutive ball of energy, including Bono. But on the top of the list was one of Tutu's best friends, the Dalai Lama, with whom he was in the process of writing the book, Joy. However, at the last minute, the South African government refused to grant the Dalai Lama a visa to visit the country. Because the Dalai Lama is a threat to the people of South Africa? No. Evidently, the ANC government was getting pressure from the Chinese to not acknowledge the Dalai Lama out of fear that it would bring attention to the Chinese occupation and oppression of Tibet. Needless to say, Tutu was livid. He went so far as to say, "It is quite unbelievable the discourtesy that they have shown. This government, our government, is worse than the apartheid government." He did everything he could to shame the government, reminding them that they used to be the occupied, the oppressed, and now they're siding with the oppressors. All to no avail. The Dalai Lama was not allowed to attend. This kind of behavior was especially familiar to Tutu. Back in 1980, Columbia University wanted to grant Tutu an honorary doctorate, but the South African government refused to grant him a visa, allowing him to travel to New York City to receive the award. So guess what? The president and trustees of Columbia University all got on a plane, flew to Johannesburg, and presented the award to him anyway. Then in 1984, Desmond Tutu received the Nobel Peace Prize, the first Nobel laureate to be honored for leveraging the spirit of Ubuntu in changing the world. Fast forward to 2011, and three more proponents of Ubuntu shared the Nobel Prize for Peace. Lema Gboi and Ellen Johnson Sirleaf of Liberia, and Tawakkul Karman from Yemen. Karman is a journalist and a human rights activist who is the first Arab woman and first Yemeni citizen to win a Nobel Prize. And all of them made their marks by making Ubuntu real in their lives. For Lema Gboi, it was a matter of finally just getting fed up. She was tired of the war, the corruption, the violence, and the epidemic of rape and beatings in her home country of Liberia. So she got with the women of her Lutheran church and organized the Women in Peacebuilding Network. She helped lead the women in protests that had almost immediate impact, in part because the protests included a sex boycott. To their male partners, the women said, "No sex until the war ends." And guess what? The war ended. And President Charles Taylor was eventually tried and convicted of war crimes. Their movement not only brought an end to the Second Liberian Civil War, but led to the election of one of 2011's other Nobel Prize winners and the first female president of an African nation, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. Like so many other Africans of her generation, the young Sirleaf had traveled to the U.S. to receive advanced degrees that prepared her to return and help create a modern infrastructure to lift up Liberia's prospects. And of course, one of the things that makes her especially amazing is that President Sirleaf is a fellow United Methodist. In her autobiography, This Child Will Be Great, Sirleaf recounts how influential her early years were and echoes Bishop Tutu's words. "You know just how to blossom in the presence of someone who helps you have faith in yourself, who urges you to real thoughts and yet accepts you as who you are and not for what you have or can achieve, who doesn't abandon you because you failed. And you know just how you tend to wilt in the presence of someone who is forever complaining and finding fault with you. Throughout, Jesus has had tremendous faith in people and got them having faith in themselves with a proper kind of self-assurance." That's what Ubuntu can do. It can create the right environment for people to blossom, to rise up, to claim their identities as whole human beings. You might ask, if Ubuntu is so profound, then why is there so much violence, genocide, and tragedy on the continent of Africa? Because when people are not believed to be people and are dehumanized as a matter of course, it's easy to justify doing them harm. Africa is still trying to recover from centuries of colonial and imperial abuse. The worst the West has to offer has been visited upon Africa. Slavery, apartheid, the looting of colonialism, post-Soviet era Russian weapons flooding the continent in the early 90s, the continued trade in conflict diamonds. These are just a few of the examples. Not to mention virulent diseases, religious and tribal animosities, and natural disasters that would bring any continent to its knees. Ubuntu is not just another communication model, but a linking of means with ends, a way of being that can help overcome all the challenges still facing the continent. Ideally, Western-style democracy protects the minority and often protects the majority against a more powerful minority. And all three women who won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2011 are examples of that power at work. So the balancing act continues to place a high value on community per African culture, while honoring each person as a unique and unrepeatable gift per Western sensibilities. Bishop Tutu said, A person with Ubuntu is open and available to others, affirming of others, doesn't feel threatened that others are able and good, for he or she has a proper self-assurance that comes from knowing that he or she belongs in a greater whole and is diminished when others are humiliated or diminished, when others are tortured or oppressed. A person with Ubuntu knows that before they can be a light to the world, that they have to embrace what it takes to be a light in the first place, and that no one does it alone. And once you are lit, shine. Don't hide it. Tutu, Sirleaf, Carmen, Gaboe, they all embraced the reality that no one person was going to shine without the cooperation and bringing together of everyone's gifts in making change for the better. And it starts with what is often the simplest but most difficult tasks: forgiveness. Almost 20 years ago, we had the privilege of having Sierra Leone's bishop, Joseph Humper, speak at the church I was serving. Humper had been a part of the South African-style Truth and Reconciliation Commission in Sierra Leone. He, too, understands that it takes everyone individually and together to change the world. He said to us, "Learning to forgive those who have wronged us is the first step we can take towards healing our traumatized nation. But a forgiveness that is capable of healing nations must begin with individual people, individuals who are able to express forgiveness on a personal level, can create a groundswell of forgiveness that can offer resolution and relief, that can cross the boundaries of states, nations, political parties, conspiracy theories, and whole cultures. But it starts with each one of us. You are the light of the world. Let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works." A number of years ago, the keynote speaker at the Islamic Speakers Bureau banquet was Dr. Rami Nashashibi. A Palestinian-American, his organization, the Inner City Muslim Action Network, works in the Marquette Park section of Southwest Chicago, a neighborhood historically known for its racial unrest. He works with Jews, Catholics, Protestants, and Muslims who are Black, white, Hispanic, Arab, all banding together to fight neighborhood blight, foreclosures, and to provide healthcare needs to the poor. And his message was, you've got to start here, where you can create dialogue, conversation, and take action. There's no hope for genuine peace in the world if we can't make it happen in our own neighborhoods, where we take responsibility for creating, right here, the future we envision for the whole world. I wanted to jump up and shout, "Ubuntu!" And then he went on to quote my favorite interfaith verse from the Quran, Surah 49:13, that God created us in different nations and tribes so that we could do the work of coming to know one another. Can we add a verse from the Quran to the Ubuntitudes? In describing Ubuntu, Bishop Tutu says, "We are made for relationships, not alienation, for laughter, not anger, for love, not fear, for peace, not war. We're made by love, we are marked by love, and we are made for love. All of us, whoever we are, whatever we do, whatever our gifts, are part of the whole. And all of us together can shine, but only when we overcome our fixation on ourselves. Only when we live out the Ubuntitudes, when we live into I am because we are, will our light truly shine before others. Ubuntu!
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information, or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputtlovefirst.org.